page 32 and 33, you will notice at the top of each of the respective pieces that there is no scriptural association with any of the Nazarene codicil, any of the verses in the Nazarene codicil. So someone says, well, that is very confusing. Why would you do such a thing? So it would be confusing. Now, the reason it's done the way that it's done is because the first thing people have a tendency to do, if you say to them, turn to Romans 3, 21 through etc., they'll say, I know what that says already. And they say in their mind that they know that it says this, this, and this, and they may make a brief outline of that. So what we do is we take away the scriptural address, and then basically it's a force to read the translation, not so much because of the translation, but to read it now and try to find something new or appropriate out of the language, out of the text. One of the things that is most important is, and many times you will, those of you who are very familiar with the Nazarene Codicil will say, why didn't you use specific language, this language? We've used this particular language all along, etc. The reason we do not use specific words and vocabulary is because of their connotation in our history, in the church. So they mean, to certain people, they mean certain things. And so sometimes there's an intentional change so that when people read it, they read it differently than they have read it before. Now that is not the case with Romans 3:21, where we're at this evening, where we're looking at. We have looked through the documents. I was preparing to do a translation of 1 Corinthians. Kind of was, is, okay. Along with all the other
was, is
little jobs we have. And I read a statement in a commentary by Kovacs. And she cited this particular phrase in some of the things that are footnoted here, showing that translation should not be righteousness in the sense that we have heard it for so long a time, but that it should be justice, be God's justice. So is this God's righteousness? Well, this one you'll have to wait for 2 weeks and then we'll address that. Okay, so we've left it as justice. We're giving you the information on justice. So this is why we use justice, and we'll look at righteousness and some of its connotations now, moving into chapter 4 of Romans, where chapter 4 of where it begins to talk about Abraham. Okay? Very good. Very good. Give her it. Gibora.
Okay. Mine's on page 39 also. Just below what she was talking about, where it says, seeking and thirsting for more of God and Torah wisdom is a merit higher than what we possess in terms of true worth.
Yes.
My heart has always hungered to know more of God. And I love study. I just don't have enough time. You know, I just can't get enough study. So I have a passion just to study. So that whole paragraph just really spoke to me.
Very good.
So.
Okay. She's reading on page 39, seeking and thirsting for more of God, which we discussed from the comments of Gregory of Nyssa. And we kind of coined a little bit of a phrase called an academic dev coup. Someone who is cleaving to or devoted to the idea of, or has Kavanah in devotion. If you look at footnote 62, Kavanah, devotion and a personal inspiration or possibly cleaving to God or to his sages. And so this matches what Gibberet Rishka said in the idea of asking the Hakamim or studying or communicating with the men of wisdom. Okay? Very good. Very good. I like that. Gibberet Hadassah.
On page 34 with the picture of the,
very good.
The stone, it made me, just made me think about the whole concept that, and I'm not sure if I can really articulate it very well, you have to make a very firm decision. I mean, the, becoming Jewish is a big decision.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a huge decision, and until then, you can only be, you can only get so close to Hashem.
Right.
And
absolutely.
We, and that is not to malign any
right
efforts or kindness of Gentile Christians at all.
Right. Exactly.
But it, it's a giant step, and I think that stone illustrates it very perfectly.
Very good.
You can't come across here until, like Rabbi Yosef tells us about, you know, about the Passover Seder,
mm-hmm.
until you're willing to eat this afikoman,
right,
and take on the suffering,
very
pay the price.
Very good. Very good. You'd be surprised. My friend Joseph Good. We've been to Israel with him several times, and he's done a considerable amount of work in looking at the temple and things of this nature. Well, because he carries groups and he's constantly in discussion concerning temple, etc., people, Gentiles, those that are, you know, firmly convicted that Yeshua is Messiah, but still at that place in the road where they're not sure which way they're going to go, have said, well, wait a minute, you know, is this going to change when we come into the Yemot HaMashiach? And so they have a considerable number of questions with regards to that. And then you say, if the temple is structured, even in the days of Messiah, in the way that it was in the first century, then yeah, there will be a soreg there. There will be a fence, and they will not be able to cross over that fence into the more sanctified or holy courts. And so saying that to them has been, very interestingly, an inspiration to move toward conversion. And I know of two people for sure that was one of their motives. They were, like you said, it's not so much that this is a barrier in the temple, but it is that barrier between me and Hashem, because I can only go so far because I'm Gentile, etc. So, it's made a profound impact on some people with regards to that issue. Okay? So that's very good. Very good. Let me just... Well, I'll pick up on this in a few minutes. Give her a Simcha.
The wonderful ladies have taken everything. I agree with everybody. Those were my things that hit me too. So.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Okay. Give her a line. We're going to start the stopwatch. I'm sorry. I'll get you in a second. Go ahead.
Okay. Your each toe broken. Be careful right now.
Again, they pretty much hit on it, but the cleaving to God part really struck me, because earlier on page 35, when it says, the text of the Torah Seder along with the periscope of Mordecai teaches us clearly when there is a disregard for the Sabbath, there is erosion that causes degradation, am I saying it right?
Mm-hmm.
Of all mitzvot of God. And if we cleave to God and His Word, I don't think there will be erosion in our lives at all. But if we don't cleave to Him, we will experience that, where it's not just one thing, but it's everything.
I want to say something that's perhaps a little bit different than you've ever heard before.
Okay.
We teachers, we love to give scriptures out and have people be inspired by these particular scriptures, etc. But many times the scriptures are actually misunderstood, and because of their misunderstanding, people fail to understand exactly what the author, whoever it is, really is trying to say. So, for example, if you read in 2 Timothy 3:16, it said all scripture is inspired. Okay? Now, you know this word in Greek is theophanesta, which means it's breathed out of the mouth of God. Now you got a big problem. You start to think about what was breathed out of God's mouth as scripture. What was it? You can say both Torah, oral Torah and the written Torah too, right? Because he dictates, in a matter of speaking, he dictates the five books to Moshe. So you see that the inspiration, or this cleaving to God and cleaving to his word, is that specific word. Now that's not to minimize the prophets, the writings, the Nazarene codicil, or anything else, but you realize that that has a very special connotation when it speaks about that. It's very, very interesting how our mind starts to go, well, wait, what should be the priority here? Okay, very good. I like that very much. You read Dr. Elisheva?
Mine is on page 33 in the footnotes. It says, whenever it's talking about it's speaking about Bamidbar 15:15, that there will be one statute for you and one for the alien that sojourns with you, a perpetual state. It shows that, you know, that we all have to live under the authority of God. And we all have to do the best to do what He likes and not what we like. And so the thing that we have to know is, you know, there's such a division among even denominations, and even not only just Jewish and Christian, but just in Christianity themselves, there's so many that everybody needs to know that we all have to live under one Torah, and we have to do what God likes and not dislikes. And Torah tells us what God likes and what He doesn't. So that was very important to me.
Very good. We'll get into that in just a few minutes. Okay, let's go to page 32. You may want to break that out, Adonuel, whatever you want to do. I don't dare you do what you want. One brief comment with regards to Mordecai or Mark. Some may wonder why we discussed and said that these events were over the discrepancies that took place in the court of the Gentiles, and why we made the delineation for the court of the Gentiles. And I think it is evident, if you begin to apply hermeneutic, you will understand that hermeneutic, especially what His Eminence calls, or we have dubbed, the chorale hermeneutics, well, I think we talked about that last week, you will look and it gives you a hint as to how to determine what was transpiring in that specific setting. And if you look at the middle paragraph of Mordecai, page 32, where it's italicized, and the highlighted piece is tells you this would be called the temple, or the Beit HaMikdash would be called the house of prayer for all peoples or for all nations. Okay? Yeshua uses this particular pasuk, this verse, to show exactly what is transpiring. So in other words, the Gentiles were not being afforded an opportunity to come into the Beit HaMikdash, the temple, in any way at that particular time and be able to worship God. Okay? Now, if you have never read the book Jesus the Pharisee, you will not know that in 20 common era, 20 before the common era, 20 years, 18 years, Shammai enacted 18 edicts, and all of those edicts, we do not have a copy of the edicts to this day, but we understand the repercussions of those particular edicts, okay? And the repercussion of those edicts were that they were opposed to Gentile attendance of the synagogue, Gentile attendance at the temple, Gentile conversions, etc., etc., okay? Now, those edicts lasted most likely till about the year 49 Common Era. And that is the time when Hakamsafet is speaking or goes to Cornelius. Okay? And you will remember the passage, I think it's in chapter 10. Okay, yeah, 10 and 28. And this will also explain his vision, and we'll say this and we'll move on quickly. Said verse 28, then he said to him, Hakamsafet is speaking to Cornelius. He said, you know how it is unlawful for a Jewish man to keep company with or go to one of the other nations. Okay? I would challenge anybody who thinks that that passage speaks of a Torah prohibition to hunt it down and prove it to them. Because it does not say in the Torah that you cannot have some association with them. It will tell you how you can have an association with them, limits, etc., boundaries, etc., but it will not tell you you cannot. So either Hakamsafet has fabricated something, or we have to find a different understanding of what he said. Okay? We understand what we come to understand from various writings, the writings, Mishnah, Gemara, etc., that the edict of Shammai lasted until this very time, and what he is referring to is to an edict of someone or someone's judgment. If you want to do a little bit of a hermeneutic, you will find out that this word is a dogma, and it's a dogma, and when it's a dogma, it's never a Torah commandment. Okay? So, at this particular time, now you will just read this piece of the verse, so this will teach you and tell you what his vision was while he was on the roof. He said, he just gets done with this, he says, but God has shown me that I should not call any man common or unclean. Okay, so he's saying that there's nothing wrong with the man. Okay, so now let's ask a question. God says, there's nothing wrong with John Doe down here on the corner. And you say, okay, God, I understand that there's no problem with, you know, having a discussion, etc., albeit some of these things, looking for you, I found you. Okay. Some of these things are very difficult to deal with. Okay, but let's ask a question. Jewish man in the first century. Okay, everybody there? Like my magic trick, made everybody a Jew in the first century? You going to go in and sit down and have lunch with this guy?
No.
He may not be unclean. His person may not, but his food is definitely not clean. Right? And he's sitting down there with, pork chops and
applesauce.
Whatever he's eating, right? And guess what? Okay, so just because the man himself is not considered unclean does not mean his kitchen is clean, and it does not mean you can go in there and just have what you want, okay? Everybody understand that? Okay. Now, let's attack a problem. First of all, leave the questions at the back for you to answer. I think all of you should be quite capable of answering the questions. If you think that you're not capable of doing it, then you can send me an email and we'll work at it. Page 32. Now the justice of God, attested to by the Torah, the Nevi'im, the prophets, and the writings, has been manifest apart. That's the way it reads in your Bible, right? Huh?
No.
No. But now I'm reading the King James. So I will be speaking in the holy tongue. But now the righteousness of God without the law is manifested, being witnessed by the law and the prophets, even the righteousness of God, which is by faith of Jesus Christ upon all and upon all of them that believe, for there is no difference. The minute a Jewish person reads that thing, they'll think immediately that HaKamshua is a heretic.
And many scholars will agree with him.
Oh, absolutely.
Whether they're Jewish or not.
Whether they're Jewish or otherwise. Making him a marginal Jew and many other things. Okay? Convert.
One who lessens the power of Torah in order to convert the Gentiles.
Secret agent of the Roman.
Right.
Government.
All kinds of things. Okay. So, and one of the things he's been speaking about is the advantage of being Jewish. Okay? So if he's been speaking about, in the previous pericopes, the idea of there being an advantage to being Jewish, why would all of a sudden he come up with something that is at the very core of Jewish value, the Torah, and say, yeah, we got a new thing that's going on now. It's called faith. Now, most of you see that the building next door is gone. We used to have classes in that building there, and we had a friend of ours from Israel come as a tour guide, and she came and we asked her to give us on Sabbath a little Sabbath lecture. And so she gave us a lecture, and I don't remember the specific lecture, but this is what I do remember of the conversation. She said to me, "Walter, there's something that you have to explain to me because I do not understand it." And I said, "What is that, Gila?" And she said, "Faith. I cannot understand this concept of faith. Just simply believing, and then you saying that just because somebody believed something, that all of a sudden now they're free to do as they choose." And my response was, "That's not what I believe. That may be what others believe, but that's not what I believe." His Eminence and I were having a discussion the other night, and I had read some material with regards to things that we'll be speaking about in the future. But we said, if you really think that, if you really think that that's the case, then read Hebrews 11. Was it simple belief that caused these miraculous things to happen, or faithful obedience? So when God says to Abraham, "I want you to take your only son," he says to God, "I believe you." God said, "Well, that's good enough." And then if you look at it from a Jewish perspective, it was so good enough, or not so good enough, that Sarah dies over what Abraham's about to do to their son. Okay, so it's not faith, it's faithfulness. Look it up for yourself, hunt it down, and you'll find out the fidelity. That fidelity, and we discussed this some in the coming the material that you will have for this Friday. Okay, now let's read on and we'll work this out. Now, justice of God is attested to by the Torah and the Nevi'im, and the writings has been manifested apart. Now, I wrote Gentiles here, but you can pencil in anyone that you want to, whether it's Jews or whether it's whatever. Anybody who does this without the proper guidance of the proper teacher. And I'm not here to pat me on the back, or you know, what I have to say about it. I'm not here to make my boast. I'm not here to say, well, look at what I can do or say or otherwise. And I have said, as I said last week, that when I speak of the Hakamim, I'm speaking of those who are my predecessors, those who are my mentors, etc. So I'm not calling you to give devotion and all that to me in that respect.
I'll do that for you.
Okay, thank you. It's not my job to pat myself on the back, nor do I even wish to do such. What I want more than anything from anyone who comes in contact with me is to study. That's what I would try to invoke in you, is to study the material and be wise enough to think outside of what you've learned in the past and say, is there a possibility that there is a different understanding to this text? And most of you who are now reading Romans will say, this is not the Romans I read when I was in the church.
This is from Rome to Zion.
Rome to Zion instead of Rome to, from Jerusalem to Athens. Okay, so anyone who makes an attempt, we said that this is exactly what Adam and Chava did. They said, guess what we'll do? We'll just, fig leaves is cool. We'll just put on fig leaves and it'll all be good. And God says,
yeah.
He said, Adam, where are you? And Adam said, I hid myself because I was naked. Wait, we got a problem now. Who told you that? Now this begs a question. Did God actually not see him? God actually not know what he had done? It's interesting because some of the rabbis say that it could also say, Adam, how are you? Knowing exactly what he did, but how are you doing with what you've accomplished here, you know? All right? It's very interesting because we have discussed, I don't know if it's in this one. Yeah, here, if you look in the Midrash Rabbah, you will see that what he says okay, look at the middle of the paragraph. For the Lord regards the way of the righteous generous, but the way of the wicked He will punish. And what does Tobit mean? It said he destroyed it from before his sight and associated with the fall of mercy when he created him. So what it's telling you is God said, I'm just not going to look at it. I'm just going to hide it from my own sight. Wait a minute. So, you know, when I did that thing that the Torah told me not to do, does that mean God saw me or not saw me?
He did, but he just chose not to look.
No, he didn't see me. Why? Why doesn't he see me? He said, I will hide it from my eyes. So what does God see? Only the positive things that you do. Only the constructive things that you do. That's what he sees. He does not see. It's not that He's made a covenant in himself to say, I'm just not going to look at it. It's not that God can't see sin. He doesn't see it at all. He doesn't look at it at all. And so, you know, when you show up at prayer service on Saturday morning, he says, oh, there you are. Wonder how you been. You know what that means?
Benzino.
Rest of the week, you haven't done anything that counted as positive merits on your... And by the way, we are in the month of Elul. And by the way, the coming... Now I'm going to get them really messed up, right? Coming constellation is what? Holding the scales in her hand.
Virgo.
Not Virgo. Libra, isn't it?
Libra.
No. Okay, Virgo is in...
It's the Virgin.
The Virgin month. That's in December where Jesus was born a virgin. You didn't know that? That's in Virgo.
It's Libra because it's my sign.
Your sign. Yours. You own it. Very interesting. I like that.
He gave it to me.
He gave it to you? Yeah. Very good.
He wanted to be born at the time. He gave it to me.
Very good. I like that. He gave me the line.
For my sake, the world was created.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay, so he does not see. Okay, but guess what? Here we're in this month and we're asked to do tshuva, to return to God and turn toward God. Okay? So God does not see your sin. He says, where's so-and-so today? Where are they at? They took a vacation. So, without the guidance of a Torah teacher, through faithful obedience and union with Yeshua, the Messiah. Now, it's very interesting. How can you be someone who's in union with Messiah, who happens to be a Jewish rabbi? Let's see. What does that mean? If I'm going to be in union with the Jewish rabbi, you got to keep kosher?
Better pay your dues.
Mm-hmm. You got to pay your dues. Okay. To be in union with Messiah, who practiced faithful obedience, so there is no separate statute. What does your holy version say? Your Lashon Kodesh, the holy tongue, what does it say? It says, in the end of verse 22, for there is no difference.
No distinction is what mine says.
Okay, very good. So that means that the Jew and the Gentile saw the same, right? It does something. You don't have to be Jewish. It's all the same. You just, it's no problem. Faith is faith. You just have a little faith. Now, for those of you, how many have looked for a Hebrew New Testament? You've looked for one?
Yeah.
Very good. Can you trust it?
I have a Yiddish New Testament.
Very good. Can you trust it? No.
I'm still having a hard time reading it, honestly. It looks like Hebrew, but it sounds
like
German.
If you got a okay, let's nail this down. Okay, we know that Delitz is the one who translated the Nazarene Codicil into Hebrew, right?
With the aid of a rabbi.
Okay, and with the aid of.
His Lutheran
church. Okay? So could it possibly have Lutheran ideology woven into a Hebrew version of a Hebrew New Testament? Could you do such a thing?
Absolutely.
Only if you were willing to commit such a heinous crime as doing such. Okay, I have for Adon Yoel a place where I'd like him to show me the last word in the Hebrew New Testament in verse 22, and it is?
Havdel.
Havdel. Which is associated with the idea we say Havdalah, right? We have a point called Havdalah on Saturday evening that turns to Sunday evening, and that is the point where we separate or make a distinction between Sabbath and the mundane. And we light a candle, etc. We go through a short ceremony, etc. Abdel. So, in other words, he says there, if you read it in Hebrew,
Ain
Habdel, there is no distinction between the Jew and the Gentile. This is what he puts in a Hebrew version of the Nazarene Codicil.
Is that from David?
Yes. And that is his oldest manuscript. You think that's, forgive the language, but you think that's bastardized? You read the more contemporary versions.
I didn't buy them.
Don't buy them. Okay. Now, it's very interesting to go back to your Nazarene Codicil, or our verse here. You will see where I translated the word and said there is no separate statute, chukha. That is because when you want to do this wonderful exercise of hermeneutic, you begin reading the text, and you need, when you come to some words that are used very minimally, you want to hunt down as much information as you can. Very interesting, this word diastole, is a word that actually refers to a statute. Now, if you're not familiar with chuk in Hebrew, I got a marker around here somewhere. Okay, you put an IM on there, chukim, chukot, etc. A statute, we say, is something that we can't rationalize in our human thinking. Why is there a blue thread in the fringes, the tzitzit? Why is there this? How come we can't have cheeseburgers? How come, etc., etc., etc.? There are things that you want to know. Why can't we do these particular things? And in short, the answer is?
Because God said.
Are you going to be faithful while he said? Why, sure I am. Because there was a TV series years ago that said, Father knows best. So, as I hunted and hunted through Theological Dictionary, through Brown Driver Briggs, through all the sources, etc., I troubled over diastole, and then came to realize that what it is parallel to this word, hoch, which then became really interesting because our Torah Seder talked about hoch as well, those statutes that he has established. And so all of a sudden now, through cross-linguist hermeneutics, we came to an ability to make the connection and make the translation of Romans. By the way, I think there's a question in the back that asks something of that nature. So, and I quote here some of the information in footnote 34. So if you're 34 and you can find your answer to that question. Okay, so there's no separate statute for the Jew and the Gentile. So that means one of two things. That means either there are no statutes at all, that we don't have to keep them, Jew or Gentile, or
it's for everybody.
It is for both parties. And the Torah says, and so the Torah is good for everybody. Which, you know, I mean, stop and consider the fact that the Torah is the cosmos. That's a pretty interesting thought, I think. We need to mull it over a few hours. So he says, and for all have sinned, and this is your Romans road that Adon Yoel is saying now is the road to Zion. So to fall short of the glory of God being justified by the gift of the Torah. So number one, he is saying here and implies that there is some sort of a gift that has been given to the Jewish people. And the gift that the Jewish people know of, when you say, what gift did God give you? And they will say,
The Torah.
Notena Torah, the gift of the Torah, that is the greatest gift that God gave us. So where do we find the path to salvation? Through the Torah. Does that minimize who and what Yeshua is? Absolutely not. Because John said he is the living Torah, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows how to read John 1:1, right? In the beginning was the Torah, the Word was Torah, and God was the Torah, and etc. Okay, so it's speaking of the Torah. And so Yochanan is giving one of the highest compliments to Yeshua he possibly could make by calling him a Torah. Right? If somebody called me a Torah, I would just jump for joy. Because he's saying something very, very profound. Yeshua was the personification of the Torah. Both the Torah, right? The oral as well as the other. Okay? So one thing that I want you to understand is that if we point the text toward the Gentile and the negativity of the Gentile, number one, this is because that's the view that Chacham Shaul has of the Gentile. But I'm not being negative to try to say that the Jews are without spot and blemish, because we've been castigated by God more times than anything else, right? Because he holds us to a higher standard. And if you're held to a higher standard, you make little mistakes, and what happens? He gets the ruler out and whacks you on the back. No, that was Catholic. I'm sorry. Okay, so he said, yeah, everyone has come short of this glory, but God has given us the gift of his Torah in chesed. Jewish people don't say that we did this wonderful thing and we merited the salvation of the grace or the loving kindness of God. They understand clearly that there was nothing that they could do to merit this chesed of God except be the underdog. Which for some reason we always seem to be. And miraculously,
have a cape
that would wear it underneath our clothes. Mine has four strings on it. Four. Okay, with the redemption which is in the Masorah of Yeshua HaMashiach, the teachings, the oral Torah of Yeshua, Yeshua's connection with the Torah, and the writings of the oral Torah, it's very interesting how it's amazing how that, I've said this many times, but people can understand that, guess what? Yeshua says the most important of all the mitzvot is the Shema. And then mysteriously, you open up to the very first paragraph of the Mishnah, and it starts with a discussion on the Shema. I find that pretty fascinating. So that either means that Yeshua was in the group that said, this is how it has to be, or this is important, which he could have learned from his teacher, and or they said, he's right on top of it. This is exactly the truth. And the logic behind it is very interesting, because it's in a section called agriculture. Give me a break. If you're talking about agriculture, let's talk about agriculture. What are we going to talk about the Shema?
We got to have some rain.
Oh, okay. You do? All right.
Could it be because the agriculture at the time pertained to everyone's life and the Shema was to pertain to everybody's life? Saying that agriculture was?
No, I'm not going to say it like that. That's a good idea, but I'm not going to jump on that bandwagon yet. Good idea, okay?
It's not very good.
I think we need to stress the fact that Yeshua is saying that this is the most important thing, and then that the rabbis understand we, and it's the way of the Mishnah, it's the way of the Oral Torah. You can be reading the Oral Torah and all of a sudden it seems like it's taking this side trail and you think this topic doesn't even belong in this particular discussion, it belongs somewhere else. And it's very interesting also in the Mishnah, because while it happened, if it talks about that topic there, very seldom will it mention that topic somewhere else. The rabbis knew that, we've already discussed it, we don't need to discuss it again. Especially Yudhah Nasi, who didacted the Oral Torah, the Mishnah. Okay, so redemption in the Masorah of Yeshua Mashiach, who God displayed publicly as though Yeshua were a propitiation by His life and through His faithful obedience. Now, we said this last week in the translation. We said, how will God judge the entire cosmos? He'll parade the Jewish people in front of the cosmos and said, you said you couldn't keep the Torah? What's that San Francisco kid? Frisco kid?
Frisco kid.
What's that? Some kind of Torah. This was to demonstrate His, God's justice, because in His patience, God passed over. Now you see why the passage is there to say, God is so gracious that the only thing that you're putting on your credit card is your positive points. But guess what? When He looks at your credit card, He's going to say, well, wait a minute here. So we're like 24 hours in a day. And you got 22 minutes here? What's up with that? You know, God, you sent me in the middle of all of those Gentiles and I had to work with all those Gentiles. He said, yeah? If you'd have spoke one word of Torah, it would have showed up on your benefit. But guess what? Anybody who works in the construction world knows how tough that really is. They're not talking about the Torah.
What's that?
The sins previously committed for, in other words, see here, the chesed of God is absolutely chesed, and it's absolutely part of our lives. So don't think, the Jews think that there's no such thing as grace or chesed, okay? They like chesed much more because it's a loving kindness of God rather than the Christian idea of grace, okay? And this is why, the only reason I don't use that vocabulary is because it comes with all this excess baggage, right? And so sometimes we have to think outside of the box to see something that is godly because it's been given a stigma, and we have to remove the stigma, and the only way to do that is with a change of the language, because all language has its own baggage, as it were. Okay, so he passed over that demonstration of His justice in the Olam Hazeh, present time, so that He might be just and the one who justifies by faithful obedience in the union with Yeshua HaMashiach. Now, page 39, and we'll close here. Gregory of Nyssa came to the place that the Kalsune, which is usually translated righteousness, it means justice. He said it means justice, the justice of God. And God is absolutely just, so it's not a problem. Is His just justice righteousness? Absolutely. But it's better for us to see and understand justice because we understand that God is just. So when someone passes away, we say, God is the faithful judge, okay? So, in other words, there are circumstances that I may not know, but God is the faithful judge. His being the faithful judge means that He knows circumstances and things that I don't know. I had a friend who, in northwestern Indiana, was feeling ill one day. He worked and was 2 weeks away from his retirement. He worked in the steel mills, northwestern Indiana. He felt sick. He went to the doctor. The doctor said, something's wrong. Come back tomorrow, and we will run some more tests. Came back the next day, and the doctor said, we're not sure. We have some suspicions. Come back again tomorrow. He came back the third day, and they said, you have terminal cancer. You know how you have those friends or those people that have influenced your life, and you know that they're the real thing. You're not somebody who's you know, just talking a talk, etc. This guy was the real thing. And being a part of that group or that movement that said, you know, faith is the answer to everything, he told everybody, he said, leave the room. Junior, you stay. I am Walter Oakley Jr. And they knew my father, so they always called me Junior. And he asked me to pray for him. And I prayed. I was as sincere and, quote, full of faith as I absolutely felt was possible. 2 weeks later, he died. And I was a young minister at that particular time, not very seasoned in the Word, working hard to be so, but not at any level of proficiency. And I went to my pastor and I said, I don't understand this. You know, we teach faith, 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 teach faith, faith, faith. I said, I got faith. I said, but he died anyway. And not knowing Brooke Diane Mitt, right? Said, she says, was a woman pastor. She said, God's the faithful judge. And I said, okay. Because he has something that I don't know or understand and it's beyond me. So understanding God's justice is, for us, the same thing. We need to come to the place that we think, you know what, we think we're the masters of our own beings and souls, and we're masters of our own destiny, etc., when we fail to realize that, guess what, God has a plan mapped out, and, you know, sometimes the things that you think are on the agenda are not there. So you need to truly seek His wisdom, etc. One of the things that Gregory has posited here, if you look and read this particular piece of the commentary, is that he was actually trying to say, by translating dikaiosune into justice, that people needed to pursue a level of a connection with God, or a more prominent connection with God, through something we call devkut, or kavanah. Kavanah means intention in prayer. So when you're praying, you pray with a certain intention. And so this is what he's not using these Jewish phrases. I give the Jewish phrases to try to clarify what he's saying. And so he calls them, says that they should be cleaving to God. And then from this we say, as the Rambam says, cleaving to God, commandment number 6 in his list, is to cleave to God. He explains in cleaving to God that cleaving to God means to connect yourself with someone who is a Torah teacher, who can dispense to you wisdom from the Torah, insight from the Torah, and guidance from the Torah. Now that becomes very interesting, because that means that the Gentile who is turning towards God, Acts chapter 10, should have a Torah teacher. He should have somebody who is qualified to teach him the Torah. And so from that we came to the place that we talked about, academia, in the middle of the paragraph that starts seeking and thirsting. Wikipedia says that it is an academy, or academia is a community of students and scholars engaged in higher education. So I say to those of you in this particular congregation, pay attention. As we may have many things that we do. What we are interested in this congregation, what is the specific duty of this congregation, is to push toward having an academic community, a community that unlocks the secrets of the Nazarene codicil in association and connection with the Torah. And I'll say this as we would in the South, if it ain't Torah, it ain't so. And Zimonis will tell you that clearly as you take his Greek course, etc. Okay? So, what I had come up with is this phrase, academic devkut. And by that, I mean somebody who cleaves to God, cleaves to the Torah scholars in an academic mindset. So, we want to have people who are devoted to study, Torah study, cleaving to God, etc. Now, all of you that are either listening by internet or here present in the room, are not the average people. Jewish people are special people. Now, that doesn't mean that we're better than everybody else. It just means we're special. We're the ones that he picked to be special. Now, if you watched Fiddler on the Roof, he said, couldn't you pick somebody else to?
Sometime.
And my favorite line is, having riches is a curse. May I be smitten and never recover.
Then do that. Spread it around.
So, it's amazing how much wisdom comes out of these silly little movies like this, huh, Frisco Kid?
Well, Psalm 112 says wealth and riches are in his house.
Absolutely.
They're two different things.
That's right. You're exactly right. Okay, so we'll stop right here. I hope you got the point for this evening. You need to write it down immediately so you can turn it in next week. Okay? Questions or comments? No questions? No comments? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Earlier we were speaking about how, or you were speaking and we were listening, about how there's a mistranslation for the word, and they say that there is no distinction between the Jew and the Gentile, and that's not correct. What's interesting is that even in their mistranslation, they still hit the heart of what we think, because there's not supposed to be a difference. Gentiles in the land are still supposed to follow Daniel's Jews, and I just thought it was interesting, even their agenda, that while they tried to change the meaning, they still came really close to the mark.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, because if we say there's no distinction, that means that they have to change their way and accept the Jewish way, rather than the way that has been said right by scholars to this point. It said, guess what? It means there's no distinction. It means that a Jew can do whatever he wants. That's, God forbid that it ever should be said that way, but that's basically what's said, so I can understand it. But it's very interesting. He spoke about land, right? With the Gentiles in the land. Gentiles in the land. The land. Which land? Is it land or is it earth?
I think it's the land.
It's the earth. What's the earth?
Why is it earth?
Why? Tell me, why is it the earth? Adam's job wasn't to just stay in the... Adam's job wasn't to stay in the garden and say, isn't it sweet? Isn't it wonderful? He was to take authority over the earth. And the water came out of a place called Eden. And it went into a garden. Well, they called it the Garden of Eden. Why did they call it the Garden of Eden? Because the river from Eden, the mountain of God, now this is going to freak some people out, right? The mountain of God, it flowed out of that place, and it flowed out into four different rivers, etc. Okay?
So the land is supposed to be the operation center to go everywhere else.
Okay, Eric, this is real what you're saying, the land, in that, we can say that generally, that this is, yeah, the operational center, but that's the only reason it's a place that's special is because it's the operational center, etc. But it's the whole world. Yeshua says what?
Take it to the world.
He didn't say go back to Gan Eden and just make Gan Eden. He said go to the whole world. And in essence, he's saying make the whole world Gan Eden. It has to be the whole place has to be Gan Eden.
Wasn't more than just the world that was being addressed to Adam,
but
wasn't it the entire cosmos?
Absolutely. And so you give it up for an apple.
For very good apple
reasons.
Very good.
Well, okay, you say so.
But the rivers, the four rivers, represent the four levels of Torah teaching, hermeneutically.
Absolutely.
And so those rivers go out to feed the earth. They go out from Gan Eden to feed the earth. So as we are attached to a proper Torah teacher that can teach us those four levels, then we're able to take it, like the rivers, to the earth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 99% of my work, personally, is... No, I wish it were.
Research.
Still digging.
Digging in the dirt, but I have... In my job, the job that I do 40, 50 hours a week, I have one key association with everything in the cosmos. And that is, I control which way the water goes. I determine where it goes, how fast it goes there, etc. That's my job. Controlling my Mayim Kayim. That's what you do, I don't got real.
Here, minutes, I have a question concerning Ephesians chapter 2, verse 14. In our Torah Seder, you gave us a picture of this stone that said, a Gentile shall pass beyond this barrier. And it's also where the lattice was.
Yes. There's a discrepancy whether it was lattice or wood or whether it was stone. So you know how to solve this problem, right?
Well, I think you give us that answer in this week's Torah Seder.
Okay.
And the hermeneutics that you used.
Okay, so your question about 2 and 14 is what? About this wall? You were thinking...
What I was saying is there's no way that the Christian understanding of this that Paul is writing in Ephesians that Messiah came to do away with the sword.
Right, you're exactly correct. So it's not the Sereg. What he came to do to break down was the fence between the Jew and the Gentile. So that the Gentile would have a path to salvation. Because Shammai had held them at bay and wouldn't let them come through conversion. Okay?
And that leads me to a question that has really been in the forefront of my
understanding the Bible, Hashem has always made a way for the non-Jew.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Why is there so much weight put in Christianity that this was something new, where it had always been a way?
You have to do something to divorce yourself from the Jewish people. Because if the Jewish people are right, and the Jewish writings and teachings are right, then if somebody finds out about it, guess what's going to happen? Everybody's going to want to become Jewish. So you got to do something to make a stumbling block in front of them so they can't see it. And so? Absolutely. Yeah, so the middle wall partition is... It's very interesting too. Everybody knows and it's perfectly clear in your mind that when Yeshua died on the cross, the stake, that the parochet, do you understand what the parochet is? The parochet is the curtain, and I will clarify this. You have the Holy of Holies here, the outer courts here, the outer court here, and then here is a curtain that goes between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. Actually, it is not a curtain.
It's two curtains.
It's two curtains. Okay? And the discrepancy that was part of the Mishnah is how far apart were the two curtains? But we know that they were far enough apart, and they say 3 cubits, so that's going to be nearly 4 feet. Give or take. And so, between the two curtains, the Kohen Gadol would do is, he would come with the blood, and he would turn and put his elbow in the edge of the curtain, and turn the curtain, and then walk down the corridor of the curtain, turning here, and then the other curtain would be open on the other end. So he could go like this, and the curtain would be the other way, excuse me. This would be like this. He enters here and he goes into the Holy of Holies here. All he has to do is take his elbow and grab the curtain and then swing himself around with the vessel in his hand, go in, sprinkle the blood, turn around, come back, same process, just hook the curtain as you're coming out. That is not the curtain that was ripped in two. When you looked at the temple, inside of this area, if you could look down from above on the temple, and it has this type of shape, in here, right here, just about as it goes in, actually it was hanging all this way here, there is a curtain that was hanging in the ceiling of the temple. And it had this mysterious name that Josephus speaks of, and Medot talks about it, and he called it the heavens.
It had stars on
it. It had the entire, not constellation, but the zodiac. It had it on there. And so this is the curtain. This curtain, not the parochet. It's that was the curtain that was ripped in two. Say?
The constellations.
Mazalot. Mazalot. Okay, so that's the curtain that was rent. Now the big question is,
what does that mean?
What does that mean? You have to read Guide to the Perplexed to understand. What it means is that now, if you read in Genesis, you read that the Jewish people were not under the control of the spheres, the intermediaries. They were not under that influence or under that control. But the Gentile people were. So, for the Gentiles who turned to Yeshua, now they're not subject to the zodiac, as it were. They're subject to Yeshua, to what he says, what he leads, what he shows, not to the This is why he attacks, both in Romans and both in Ephesians, why Hakam Shaul attacks this idea of all these principalities and powers, etc., that we have to war against. It's not a problem anymore, right? Yeshua is the authority. And the Jewish people are the authority, not subject to that. So you tell me you're going to tell some Jewish soul he's not the chosen of God? Man, they grow up with it absolutely ingrained in every ounce of everything that they experience. I'm Jewish, I'm Jewish, I'm Jewish, and I have a connection, a covenant with God, etc.